From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It's one thing to say you're unsure about a God, unsure how the universe works, unsure about ghosts and spirits and other aspects of a supernatural realm. There are a lot of people who fit into this category, actually, people who feel ambivalent about God. But it's another thing entirely to express the affirmative belief that, in fact, there is no God. Throughout human history, that's been a dicier proposition. And even today, asserting this belief in American culture can be seen as controversial, even offensive. Here in Utah, one atheist group couldn't get a billboard company to promote the idea that atheists are even part of any community. So today in the program, we're talking about where atheism fits in the scheme of things and what it's like to live among the believers. Join us after the news.
Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. Our online audio and podcasts are made possible by KUER and its listeners. If you like Radio West, help us make it happen. You can donate $10 right now by texting KUER to 85944. That's KUER to 85944. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Earlier this month, in preparation for their 40th annual convention being held in Utah next year, the group American Atheists tried to buy some space on billboards here in the state. There are 9 billboard companies here in Utah, and the American Atheists contacted them all. They only got 2 to actually respond, and both turned them down. One of those companies said it was rare for them to reject advertising, but in a statement they gave to the Salt Lake Tribune, they said, if there was a message that was misleading or if there was one that was offensive to the moral standards of a community, that's a quote, it wouldn't make the cut. But why would the idea that there are people who do not believe in a God, who have a different view about the universe and human existence, why would that be offensive or why would that be seen as insulting to the sensibilities of any community? That's what today's show is about. We're talking about where atheists fit in the American cultural landscape and where they fit here in Utah, where some 80% of people say they do believe in some version of a God. So, what's it like to live among believers if you don't? And when do you assert your rights or your place? We invite you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'd also like to hear from those of you on Facebook and on Twitter. Joining us today is David Williamson. He's an associate professor of sociology at the University of North Texas. He's co-author of the new book, There Is No God, Atheists in America. He joins us today from his office on the campus of the University of North Texas in Denton, Texas. And David Williamson, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Dan Ellis is joining us. He's the president of Atheists of Utah. That's the local chapter of the group American Atheists. And he's here with us in the studio. And Dan Ellis, welcome to you.
Thanks, Doug. I appreciate it.
And Dave Moscato is with us. He's the public relations director for the group American Atheists. He's joining us from a studio in New York City. Dave Moscato, welcome to you.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I want to begin about as broadly as you can get. And I want to talk a little bit about the question of what it means to be an atheist. And David Williamson, I'll sort of start with you, because you describe atheism in the book really early on as this affirmative belief that there is no God. So I guess that precludes, does that preclude any belief in the supernatural? And what does that mean for, and we'll get to the difference between agnosticism and atheism, but atheism is something that's more active in terms of this its sense of what it believes?
That's how we defined it for the purposes of our book. We found so much variation in belief and non-belief that we felt right up front in the book that we needed to nail down exactly who we're interested in for this book, and that's how we really defined it. In our interviews with atheists, we found atheists who were materialists in the tradition of Madeleine Murray O'Hare. Mm-hmm. This is it. The physical plane is it, period. We found others who were more metaphysical, more philosophical, more open to even sort of the argument you might hear from a physicist. We don't know how many dimensions there are, so there may be other dimensions. but essentially they didn't believe that overall there is a God who is sort of guiding human history.
Dave Muscato, how do you respond to that question about sort of what is an atheist in that sense?
Well, there are many different ways to define atheism, and I think most atheists probably don't define it as a positive belief that there is no God. In my experience, a lot of atheists, myself included, define it more as a lack of belief in God, just because there's really no way to know, and I just don't see any evidence that there is one.
So does that mean no ghosts or spirits interacting from the beyond? No possibility that humans exist, you know, as energy and move into another realm? No larger sense of order beyond what is explained through nature?
I tend to look at things just based on the evidence. And if somebody could present to me convincing evidence that ghosts exist, then I would be more willing to believe that ghosts exist. And the same thing is true with God or anything else that's supernatural. I haven't seen convincing evidence that these things are real, and I lack belief in them on that basis.
So how are you different from an agnostic? And an agnostic feels unsure because there isn't evidence there, or at least that's how I see it. I always thought an atheist was different. It was had a more active sense of that question.
I think there are generally, and there's, like I said, more than a couple of ways to do this, but generally speaking, there are two different ways to define atheism. There's so-called strong or positive atheism, which is what how it's defined in this book, There Is No God, which is the affirmative belief that there isn't one.
Right.
And then there's so-called weak or negative atheism, which is just lacking faith or lacking belief that there is one. This is different from agnosticism. Agnosticism has to do with knowledge versus belief. And an agnostic acknowledges that we can't know with 100% certainty whether there's a God or not. So an agnostic would say, I'm not claiming to know this for sure. In other words, I could be wrong. But then as far as how you believe, then as a separate question, you're either a believer or an atheist.
Dave Ellis, I want to get you on this. Most people, or a lot of people who don't have a strong opinion, you know, they don't go to a church. They have kind of a vague sense of the universe. And they would probably be okay with the idea that humankind was the result, you know, of a random series of events, you know. Are they atheists? People who are kind of squishy on the idea.
I would say that they more than likely would be if they took the time to examine their beliefs.
So is that part of the difference, is that you really sit down and examine the idea?
For me, it was, yeah. Certainly. You know, for a very long time, I was just, you know, religiously unaffiliated. And it wasn't until, you know, I sat down and took the time to examine, you know, the evidence that was around me, or lack of evidence, and my own personal beliefs, that, you know, I came to the conclusion that I'm an atheist.
Yeah. So, David Williamson, is this part of the problem, trying to sort of pin down exactly what we're talking about when you're writing a book about it, having to sort of, or is that part of the process of understanding atheism, that they're kind of all over the map, at least on some levels?
I think that's part of the process. And in the book, that's the reason we included the chapter up front about the history. We see that what atheism is and how it's used publicly has morphed over the years, early on through history and up really through the 18th century. To call someone an atheist was very accusatorial. And so, you know, it was something that you would level at someone to discredit them. And it wasn't until Diderot in the 18th century, you know, that it became mainly through intellectual circles acceptable to stand up publicly and embrace that label. And so that I trace sort of affirmative atheism back to the 18th century, especially in France. But it does. It morphs, it changes. And as we argue in the book, an argument first made by Gavin Hyman,
yeah,
is that atheism typically, the way I read it, historically has been a reaction to theism. And theism, as you know, takes on a lot of different forms, has a lot of different messages. And so atheism sort of parallels it and offsets it. And in many ways, especially assertive atheists attempt to negate religion. And so whatever religion looks like in a certain era, a certain political situation, the voice of atheism tends to mirror it and to attempt to sort of negate the effects of religion.
Yeah. I want to come back to that here in a moment. Let me ask Dave Moscato. This idea in his book, God is Not Great, Christopher Hitchens used another term. He didn't coin it, but a term, anti-theism, which seems more assertive than just atheism, I guess. How do you do you regard yourself as an assertive atheist? And where does the idea of anti-theism fit in your belief system or among the belief systems of atheists?
I can't be 100% sure that some kind of spark was done by something. And I mean, that's extremely vague. That's not something that you can prove or disprove. But I really doubt it just because there's no evidence for it. So I wouldn't necessarily call myself an affirmative atheist the way that he talks about it in the book. And I'm talking about David Williamson's book. As far as Christopher Hitchens and God is Not Great talking about anti-theism, I very much identify as an anti-theist. I think religion is dangerous. It's a bad idea. It hurts people. And I wish it would go away. I think that it's the 21st century and there's no evidence that these things are true or real. And it harms people. Everything that religious people do that's good can be done by non-religious people and is done by non-religious people. And we don't need these superstitions that harm people, that contribute to magical thinking, that contribute to physical suffering from people. It's just not necessary, and I don't think that we need to continue with this.
David Williamson, I want to get you talk about, and in your book you write about the history of, as you say, it's a sort of a short history, but I wanted to ask about atheism going even further back. You mentioned the 18th century. You write about how one of the first uses of atheism, at least as a label, it came from ancient Greece.
Yes.
Talk about that, if you would.
Well, the term atheos, atheist, in the Greek comes, I believe, from the works of Plato. But even before Plato, in Greek dramas and plays, there were references to... most of them were sort of hidden. They were very subtle statements about the foolishness of believing in religion. And it's the first time that that we see people making that connection between religion and politics. And what Dave said actually traces back to ancient Greece, the recognition that politicians can use religion to control people, and vice versa. Sometimes religion uses politics to control people, but control becomes a really central notion. But it does go back to ancient Greece.
It's because you point out in the book that the real sticking point in this conflict between believers and non-believers is this idea of authority.
I think so. That's a bias that I brought out of graduate school and I've carried with me for 20 years, is that you scratch the surface of most conflict and you see power and control. I've worked for 19 years in the Middle East and observed the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It's not a theological issue for them. It's not a personality issue between them. It has to do with territory and control and self-determination. You know, the fighting between the northern in Northern Ireland really has nothing to do between the theology. Theological differences between the Church of England and Roman Catholics. It has to do with England exerting control over a part of the Emerald Isle. So most human conflicts, we may call them theological, we may call them religious, but down deep, it often has to do with concerns about control. And that's why this discussion we're having today probably will so quickly go to politics and who exerts control over politics, because that's where, you know, ultimately boundary drawing is done. Lawmaking is boundary drawing, and that always has to do with, includes moral boundary drawing, and that's the sticking point.
Dave Moscato and Dan Ellis, I want to get you both on that idea that this is about authority. It's about control. Dan Ellis, do you see it that way? Do you think about it in those terms?
I think that plays a large role in a lot of the conflict that you see between believers and non-believers, and even believers of different faiths. You know, it's one person or one group of people wanting to exert control over others because they think that something they believe is wrong or invalid and want everybody to believe exactly the same way they do.
Dave Moscato, this idea of authority. You often you hear people asserting the idea of authority, especially in relation to, you know, priesthood authority, authority to act in the name of God. Does that idea resonate with you in terms of the conflict between believers and non-believers?
Yes, very much. I mean, when people claim to speak for God, it's a lie. No, I mean, they don't know what they're saying. They're making it up, and they're proposing or trying to convince other people that these things that they're saying have authority because they come from something else. And if they can convince people to believe that, then they have a lot of power. And this causes real problems for people in countries all over the world, but in the United States, for example, with birth control access or abortion access or with marriage equality or with teaching evolution in the classroom. I mean, the examples just go on and on. These issues really do affect everybody, and separation of church and state is extremely important specifically for that reason. It's fine if people want to believe nonsense. I have no problem with that. They can believe whatever they want. It's a guaranteed right in the First Amendment. But pushing religious beliefs or religious values onto people who do not share your religion is immoral and unethical and illegal under the First Amendment constitutional right to separation of church and state.
That's Dave Moscato. He's the public relations director for the group American Atheists. Dan Ellis is also with us, the president of Atheists of Utah. It's a local chapter of the group, American Atheists. And we're also joined by David Williamson, a professor of sociology at the University of North Texas. He's co-author of the book, There Is No God, Atheists in America. When we get back from the break, we'll take your calls, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're asking a number of questions, among them this: if you're an atheist, where do you fit in American society in general or in Utah culture in particular? One atheist group, the American Atheists, couldn't even buy a billboard in this state, and the question is why? That's another question. This may explain it. Some 80% of Utahns say they believe in God. But despite that, more and more people are declaring their sense of non-belief. Here's another question for the show. When or how do you assert your rights or your place among the believers? Our guests today, we have David Williamson with us, professor of sociology at the University of North Texas, co-author of the book, There Is No God, Atheists in America. Dan Ellis is with us, president of Atheists of Utah. It's a local chapter of the group American Atheists. Dave Moscato is the public relations director of the group American Atheists. Let's take some calls. Mike is joining us from Logan, Utah. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi. Hey, I was just curious. You talked about control earlier, and I'm wondering if that's the answer to my question. My question is, does the American Association of Atheists have a prescribed idea of how they believe the overwhelming majority of the population of the earth have got to conform to this belief in a supreme being, in a God that holds them accountable for moral ideas and things that have existed since as long as we can tell?
Dave Moscato, why do people, from your perspective, create religion?
There are all sorts of reasons that people create religion. Part of it, actually, David Wolfe talks about this in his textbook, Introduction to the Anthropology of Religion. The two basic reasons are answering, according to him, answering the big questions about life as far as where the universe came from, where humans came from, what we ought to do with our lives as far as ethics, things like that. And before the scientific method, before we had real answers to those questions, people still wanted answers. They still wanted to know. So they made things up and they passed these stories around just as oral mythology, and eventually they were written down. And we have better answers now than those answers from different cultures. But the reason that religion persists is because it doesn't just provide that. Religion also provides ritual. It provides a sense of community and bonding. It provides a social safety net in times before there was governmental safety nets. And it provides a hierarchy that humans tend to fall into to some degree or another, just as the way we organize ourselves as a group. And humans, I mean, being social animals, we do better in groups. And when we have this kind of bonding that helps us identify with each other, it's an evolutionary advantage for us. It's a strategy and an adaptation that we developed that has helped us be successful in fighting other groups and in staying together. And it persists for those same reasons as far as tradition and so on. But that doesn't mean that these things are actually accurate or true as far as the supernatural things that it teaches. And atheists have the same desires to be part of a group and the same desires to have ritual in their lives as far as weddings and memorial services and things like that. But you don't need the supernatural part of it in order to have those things. We can just be humans and live and be part of a group without that if that's what we want.
I wonder, David Williamson, are we, since the word evolve comes up from time to time, are human beings, human cultures, evolving away from this idea of needing a religion to give them community and purpose? I mean, do the same things that Dave Moscato was mentioning, the ideas that gave religions, made religion make so much sense for so many people, are those dynamics changing, not just in American society, but more broadly in the world in general?
Well, to some extent they may be, and I really appreciate what Dave said and agree with him on most of that. There has been around for a long time the idea of secularization. There was a secularization hypothesis, that as societies modernize, religion sort of fades away. That's been in existence for 300 to 400 years. In the last 30 or 40 years, especially considering the American example, there are some top, especially sociologists of religion, who are reversing, and they're saying, no, that's not true. In fact, in many very advanced societies, they're actually becoming desecularized. So it's not as easy as that, and I wouldn't put it in. I wouldn't use evolutionary language for that. I think
that suggests a progression.
More
right?
likely to use that language,
yeah.
Because they are typically they are progressive, and progressive means that as a part of the evolutionary process, we are making progress, and part of that progress is emancipation. And a key part of that emancipation is emancipation from religion and the mythical beliefs that they believe are sort of poisonous, that really hold us back from that movement forward. But that's not necessarily true. We see in trends around the world that there are areas that have been secular that are becoming religious, in areas that have begun the process towards secularization and they move back and become more religious. So it's not a very clear linear relationship.
801-585-WEST, the number to join the conversation. Mike, thanks very much for the call. Let's take another call. Anders has been waiting in Provo, Utah. Anders, welcome.
Hello. I grew up non-Mormon in Provo, and so I'm really familiar with this topic. And I feel for you, Dave. As I was driving south earlier today, I saw a billboard decrying the evolution and promoting the idea that God created everything. However, I think that there is a trend in atheism, and this is what has driven me away from it, to cling to it in this almost dogmatic approach and in place of religion. So where once religion was the belief set of people, atheism takes over. And some of your comments throughout the show have led me to believe that you hold a certain, I don't want to say contempt, but that's the word that's coming to my mind, about people who do believe. And I'm curious where you draw the line between atheism as a belief in a lack of God, or atheism as a positive affirmation, and then more to the point, how those are used in doing the same sorts of horrible things that religion has done, which I'm going to take a leap here and say is because of the divisive nature of belief itself.
Okay, there's a lot there, but I think if we can sort of distill that down, it does get to a point that comes up from time to time, and I want to talk to you all about this, and that is the tactics used by atheists. Some have been, some are particularly combative, kind of in your face. Some are more passive. Dave Moscato, have you made mistakes? Have there been mistakes made by some atheists in the past that have been perceived as intolerant, too combative, too visceral for people who believe? I mean, talk a little bit about some of the tactics used by atheists over time.
Well, it depends on, you mean tactics as far as talking about atheism?
Well, let me be specific. For example, one of the questions that, and we'll talk about this more particularly, is the billboard question that came up, the fact that the American atheists couldn't even buy a billboard in Utah. But there have been other billboards. I mean, there were two billboards, for example, that you put up in Charlotte, North Carolina last summer in advance of the Democratic National Convention there. One showed a piece of toast with an image of Jesus on it and described Christianity's beliefs in this way: sadistic God, useless Savior. There was another billboard that referred to Mormonism there in North Carolina, I expect because Mitt Romney was involved in the campaign, of course. God is a space alien, baptizes dead people, big money, big bigotry. Now, that's pretty in-your-face kind of language. What do you expect to accomplish with that kind of language? And that's what I'm talking about in terms of strategy or a tactic.
Okay. Well, the reason that, I mean, these things are true statements. I mean, these are, if you've actually read the Bible or the Book of Mormon, you know that God, specifically in the Old Testament, is sadistic. He's a murderer on a massive scale.
But how's that going to help you, Dave? How's that going to help you with trying to sort of fold yourself into the American landscape by calling people who believe in God, calling their God sadistic? You may believe that true. You may have a profound belief in that. But I guess my question is, what do you think is helpful about that?
Our goal is not necessarily to get people to like us. It's equality for atheists. And if we can wake people up and help atheists who are the target of these ads understand that they need to speak up about these things and it's okay to be angry about these things because their anger is justified, they can be a part of our movement as far as being activists about this stuff rather than just not believing and discontinuing their church attendance. Part of what we do is advocacy and activism, and I mean, when you just put up a billboard that says, you know, you can be good without God or something, that is also true, but it doesn't encourage people to be activistic, and that's what we're really looking for. Mm. We want people to join us and stand up against religious bigotry, to stand up against religion poisoning our government system and poisoning children and so on. And we think that this is a good way to do it, to help wake people up.
Dave Ellis, what about you to that question?
About have people made mistakes in the past?
Well, I mean, you know, come on. You grew up LDS. You're not anymore. You're an atheist. The idea of presenting to a group of Mormons a billboard that would say God is a space alien, which is a reference to the Mormon sense of cosmology, baptizes dead people, which is a sort of irreverent reference to baptism for the dead that Mormons believe in. Is that work as a tactic in Utah?
Well, those billboards.
Dave Moscato saying it doesn't have to work. We're not trying to get friends and neighbors. We're trying to get activists.
Yeah.
Is that where you are?
Well, I think we're trying to get activists. We're also trying to get attention. You know, I mean, as you've stated, 80% of the people in the United States believe in some sort of higher power or personal God. You know, it's that 20% who are religiously unaffiliated that are the targets of those billboards and those campaigns more than anybody else. You know, we're not actively seeking to hurt anybody's feelings or to make anybody upset by those billboards. You know, we can't control necessarily people's reaction to the billboard. We can simply state the fact. And I mean, the fact remains that, yeah, part of Mormon cosmology, as you stated, is that, you know, God lives on another planet. And, you know, he doesn't live in our solar system, or, you know, he doesn't live anywhere that we can observe ourselves just through their teachings. We, you know, they tell us that he lives on another planet. They also do baptism for the dead, stating, you know, it's a difference of wording between saying that they do baptism for the dead or baptize dead people. You know, it's the same thing. It has the same meaning. It's
You put it in visceral terms and say, this is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's clearing up any possible misunderstanding or flowery language, really.
David Williamson, what do you make of that this question? Is this a problem for atheists, this idea of them trying to get attention, trying to sort of gather activists together and use this kind of language? What do you make of that as a tactic, and whether it seems to be working or how it works in sort of broader terms, I guess?
Well, in terms of a recruitment tool, I think it might be effective, because not just our study showed, but what atheists have come out publicly and said is that, you know, for most of history, especially American history, to be an atheist was taboo. Atheists basically lived underground and unproclaimed. They hid their atheism. They were closeted. Mm. Is a language that our respondents used.
Yeah.
And so from that, they felt a sense of marginalization, of rejection, and they felt that on a very visceral level. They didn't feel welcome in this society. Now I think there is a crack, a chink in the armor, the door is cracked open, and they are beginning to sort of walk boldly through that. There are still a lot of people in the closet there who have very deep, very visceral feelings about their marginalized status. And I take, you know, that more aggressive stance in the billboards as a call to those people in the closet: come on out and join us. There are a bunch of us out here, and it's okay. Mm. You can join us. At the same time, those aggressive positions further alienate believers, and so they make less likely a very meaningful dialogue between atheists and believers. So it depends who they want to reach and what their ultimate goal is in presenting those messages.
Mm. So I guess, Dave Moscato, those people, the believers, aren't going to be with you anyway, so you may as well find the others.
Right. I mean, our target with these billboards is closeted atheists. We want them to stand up, to come out of the closet, to be open about their atheism, be proud of their atheism. It shouldn't be taboo or looked upon negatively to say, I don't believe in crazy nonsense things. I don't believe in superstition. That should be the basis. That should be the default position. Mm. And in many places in the world, that is the default position. And that's what we want to encourage people to say. Religious people, and this was mentioned in an earlier call from, I believe it was Mike was saying this, that we don't have contempt for religious people. I mean, I used to be religious myself. Many atheists used to be religious. Most of them did. It's not about looking down on them. Religious people are victims of indoctrination. They're victims of their culture telling them what to believe when these things are clearly not true, blatantly, obviously not true when you look at evidence or when you even look into it, even at a surface level. And what we want to do with these billboards, and we understand, I mean, it's obvious that people are not going to like them, religious people. They're going to look at these and they're going to say they're making fun of me. But we're not. We're trying to tell closeted atheists, you know this stuff is not true and it affects you, and it's time to do something about it and come to our website, atheists.org, join us, come to our convention, and be part of this.
Let's go back to the phones. 801-585-WEST is the number. Chase is joining us in Salt Lake. Hi, Chase.
Hi, Doug. Thanks for having me on. Love the show. Really excited about the conference next year. I just wanted to comment on kind of the discussion we're having. It seems to me that atheism and the minority is always consistently asked, you know, why are you so militant? And why are you so angry? Is this a good tactic for you being accepted? And I just don't know if we see that question for other minority groups, whether it's the LGBT community or the African-American community. We kind of understand that argument, that reasoning, isn't fair, doesn't make sense. We want to talk about inclusion. How do we include these groups? What are the problems in our society? And just wanted to maybe have some of you guys comment on that, and I'll take it off here. Thank you.
Thank you. Dave Moscato, what do you think?
The term militant atheist, I don't agree with this term. A militant Islamist crashes airplanes into buildings. A militant Christian shoots abortion doctors. A militant atheist writes blogs. I mean, there's nothing militant about that. Actually, in this book, There Is No God by David Williamson is the co-author. I noticed that he used the phrase atheists take up arms. And I really took issue with that, because that's not what we do. We we are rational people who try to convince others to see the way that we see using rational arguments, using evidence and logic and reason. And there's nothing militaristic about that. Our attitude may be similar in passion as far as intensity to people who are deeply religious. But that's not at all the same as saying that we're militaristic.
David Williamson, talk about that, if you would. I did notice you, for example, you referred to Madeleine Murray O'Hare as the sort of prototypical fundamentalist atheist. Do you want to describe?
Yeah, that's not a term that we coined, actually. There are a couple of other scholars who have come out with work recently and have been using that term. I really don't like it. That's a term that originally was out of the 19-teens and 20s, a movement in conservative Christianity, sort of counter-progressive moves forward in Christian seminaries and churches. Forgive that, you know, taking up arms, that was a figure of speech, and I certainly agree with you. I don't know of any accounts where atheists have actually taken up arms or been violent in any way. I do think, though, that the evidence shows, and George and I have been very careful in interpreting the feedback we got from our interviews and from our online survey, but we were really surprised at just not only how visceral and aggressive the language was in our open-ended questions, but we were also a little surprised at how non-rational some of the arguments were that atheists were making who were claiming we need to be scientific and rational. So, and I don't lay that as an accusation, but it's just our interpretation. And by the way, we've put our data online. You can get it through Penn State's Association of Religious Data Archives, ARDA. So we made it public. You know, if you don't believe us, go look at the data. But that's one argument, especially George noticed, was the idea that Christian fundamentalists would take over the U.S. government. Well, Christian fundamentalists are a fairly small minority, actually, but they're pretty vocal, and so they sound big. It's like a small dog with a big bark. But it's not rational to think that Christian fundamentalists are going to take over the U.S. government. But that's a fear that's expressed, and it's a non-rational fear. And so even in their in responses of atheists, we detected some inconsistency, claiming to be rational while some of the thought processes and some of the statements that were made and the accusations made against Christian fundamentalists themselves weren't very rational.
Let me read a few emails as we head into a break. Phil writes, I grew up Catholic, but my faith dissolved in college as I applied the logic and analysis from my coursework to religion. Nearly every society, he writes, in history has had a religion or a system of belief that has helped them cope with the world and explain things they didn't understand. It's difficult for me to believe that modern Christian mythology or that of any other religion is any more true than that of Greek mythology. John writes, it's an extremely heart-wrenching experience to realize that we aren't immortal anymore. As for interactions with others, sometimes to live in society, one must keep their mouth shut on the beliefs they hold dearest, unfortunately. Sally writes, being an atheist adult, I believe that perhaps the reason people are so uneasy with my non-belief is that it rocks the very core of what they believe and how they conduct themselves. I think the thought of the path I have chosen scares them because it makes them wonder, what if? Questions, she writes, can be scary, especially if the answers are not what you were taught to be true. We're going to take another break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about where atheists fit more broadly in American society in general, more particularly in Utah culture. Here's an email from Dan who writes from Orem. The atheist movement and such groups as Freedom From Religion and the ACLU seem to be among the foremost advocates of censorship. Their aggressive censorship of crosses and creches, of prayer and religious discussion or expression, of monuments displaying the Ten Commandments in public places, he writes, is an assault on history, culture, and on education. Adam writes, I'm an atheist. These guys are dogmatists. I'm interested in a follow-up about the divisiveness that comes from being so dogmatic, no matter the cause. And Adam, we'll get back to that, I think, in a moment. I did want to sort of move on to this question of, and Dan Ellis, this is where you come in the sense that you were raised LDS?
Yeah, most of my life.
The moment, what is it like to become an atheist in the sense I was wondering if in some ways, is it a conversion experience sort of in reverse?
I would say it wasn't necessarily a conversion process or, you know, there was no big aha moment. For me, it was, and I think this is typical of most people who claim to be atheist, you know, it wasn't, there was no general aha moment. It was a steady and slow progression through doing a lot of research, you know, learning a lot about the truth behind some of the claims that were being made, and, you know, just doing my own research and learning what was true and correct versus what I'd been taught.
But then it's interesting that the email that I read just right before the break talked about the fact that, you know, sometimes you just, yeah, you may believe something, but you just need to keep your mouth shut about it. That wasn't enough for you.
No, that certainly wasn't enough for me. I think it's, you know, I think that's not only sad but frightening that, you know, so many people seem to believe that if they disagree with something you personally believe or that you would choose to say, that, you know, their position is that you should just shut up about it. You need to be quiet. You need to stay in the closet. You need to not let anybody else know what you believe because somehow that knowledge would be dangerous.
You live in a Mormon neighborhood?
Oh, absolutely. I'm in Utah.
Okay, well, good point. So what's that like? Especially, gosh, you know, it's not just somebody who moved in from, you know, another part of the country or had another kind of belief system. You used to be among them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you still live among them. What is it hard?
I wouldn't say that it's necessarily hard. You know, I certainly don't feel the sense of community that I'm sure my LDS neighbors all feel within their own community. You know, they get together, they have their parties and block parties.
They don't
and
invite
picnics
you.
And I get invites on the door, but, you know, most of the invites are to go and attend a barbecue or a party at the local ward house.
Yeah, the elders quorum thing.
Yeah, you know, I'm not only would I feel uncomfortable in going to any of those events, but I don't want to make any of my neighbors feel uncomfortable by hosting me at any of those events. You know, I appreciate the invites. I think they're probably well-intentioned, and that they're trying to be nice, but I think they're probably also offered with no actual expectation that I would ever attend.
Yeah. It's one thing, Dave, to say, you know, Mormons and other religious people speak even more broadly, but particular to this place, Mormons, I guess, would say, it's okay if you you have another belief system. It's okay if you have some sense, but what does it mean when you say, I don't actually believe in a God? I mean, what does that, and how do they sort of perceive that? What does that imply, do you think, for believers, when you say, I don't, in fact, believe in anything like that?
Well, I think you were reading from an email earlier when you said, you know, that for a lot of people, telling them that you don't believe in God, it rocks the foundation of nearly everything they currently believe. You know, your religion, for most people, touches everything throughout their lives. In a lot of ways, it's like having a child. You know, prior to having a child, you do a lot of things that after having a child, there's just really no way that you could do them ever again or for quite some time. And there's a lot of things that having a child affect as far as what you do in your everyday life. You know, you watch different things, you listen to different things. It infiltrates every aspect of your life. And so once you release that belief in a God or you know, publicly state that you don't believe in a God, it really
threatens the other.
Yeah, you know, most people find that really, really troublesome because that's the core of what a lot of people surround their entire lives.
Dave Moscato, you've talked about some of the messages you've been getting. I think maybe it's just related to what's going on here in Utah about the billboards and things. And you've talked about how one person in particular mentioned, got a message from a man who was worried that if his wife found out he was an atheist, she would divorce him, he'd lose his children. Will you tell that story? Because that seems really disturbing. That implies not just that you're afraid that you don't believe, but that implies that you're dangerous if you don't believe.
Yeah, and actually that's a commonly held belief. I mean, when you look at surveys about this sort of thing, there are people who honestly think that atheists are dangerous. There was a survey, I think this was Gallup, in June of 2012. They were asking, would you vote for somebody for high office for president who is otherwise qualified but also fill in the blank? And when you filled it in with black, 96% of people said yes. You filled it in with woman, 95% of people said yes. You filled it in with atheist, 54% of people said yes. People just don't trust atheists. And with this particular case, I mean, we get emails and letters like that fairly regularly. This one, I don't want to give too many details and identify this person. But, I mean, basically what he was concerned about, he has given up his active membership in the church and has not been attending. And this is an extreme concern for his family and his neighbors. And basically they, someone close to their family offered to let the wife and children stay with them and stay away from the husband until he re-enrolls in the church. And he was saying, can you imagine if she found out I was an atheist and how they would respond to this? It's something that really people have reasons to worry about. We get heartbreaking letters from people who have been kicked out of their houses if they're teenagers, or who have been divorced if they went into marriage as a believer and then became an atheist, who have lost their children, who have been kicked out of college because their parents have cut them off financially. All sorts of things like this. This happens more than you would think. And it's because people choose to stay loyal to their religion over their family. And there's something wrong about that. And that's why we say religion is divisive, and it does things like this to people. It makes them make choices that are immoral, and that's part of the reason that I have such a problem with it.
So David Williamson, back to you. This idea that religious belief so often shapes how this dynamic plays out among atheists. Does it depend whether a person is a conservative believer or a more progressive believer? And are we seeing, in terms of how atheists are dealt with or considered in communities?
Oh, absolutely. I think progressive, those who are progressive and religious, actually have a good bit of common ground with atheists, especially when it comes to what they would like to see in terms of legislation, for example. So we see a very common agenda, and they actually are sort of strange bedfellows there. They actually can join forces. The more conservative a group is, the less likely they are to be able to have any kind of a positive encounter with atheists. So, yeah, that conservative-progressive spectrum within the religious world shapes a tremendous amount of the posture and the position and the dialogue that they take with atheists. And let me also add to Dave's mention of that Gallup poll. One thing that's most shocking about that poll to me was that those who would be willing to vote for an atheist for president, that likelihood was actually higher. The probability that they would vote for someone is higher if they were a Muslim or if they were gay. So atheists in that sort of spectrum of the different groups, atheists really came in at the very bottom, which shows. And atheists know that. They have a sense of that, and that's why it has been such a big deal for people to come out of the closet, is there has been a very strong anti-atheist bias in this country, always has been.
Here's an email from San Pete who writes, I find the common atheist opposition to religion short-sighted and generally motivated by anger more than sound reason. Sure, religion causes harm, but it also has done and continues to do a lot of good. The idea that the human race should just walk away from what is the primary element in human life for all of recorded history should require exceptionally strong evidence. I want to get back to that, Dave Moscato. Let me also read this from Jeanette, who writes, I'm married to a former Mormon atheist. I made a very conscious choice to keep my belief. My husband and I cannot be dogmatic, and we can't be offensive. We have to find language that has invited dialogue. Your guests, she writes, come off as arrogant, just as arrogant as some of the believers come off. Dave Moscato, what about that? So you put these really strong, visceral billboards out there, and you get the believers, the activists out. Then will you transition to try to get a sense of dialogue, or are you just not there yet?
I mean, it depends on what your goal is. Our long-term goal is equality for atheists. That's what we want. We want separation of church and state, and we want people to stop discriminating against atheists. And part of what we are attempting to do with our billboard campaigns is to call out closeted atheists, like I mentioned before, and make them angry and get them worked up about these things that so far they've just been in denial about or been going along with for the sake of not rocking the boat. And, I mean, as far as the person who mentioned that we come across as angry, I mean, yes, we are angry, and I don't have a problem admitting that. Anger is the natural human emotional response to injustice, and that's what we see is injustice. And we are fighting that, and it makes us angry, and I don't think that that's a negative thing. When you are angry, that tells you that something is wrong. It tells you that this is something that you need to care about and pay attention to. And it's an important signal from your brain as far as paying attention to these things and doing something about it. And that's why we do what we do. And yeah.
Dave Moscato, Public Relations Director for the group American Atheists, joined us today from a studio in New York City. Dan Ellis is President of Atheists of Utah, the local chapter of that group. Thank you both, by the way, for being with us.
Thank you very much, Doug.
David Williamson is a professor of sociology at the University of North Texas, co-author of the book There Is No God, Atheists in America, joined us today from his office in Denton, Texas. And Professor, thanks to you.
Thanks so much.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.